Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You don't worry about who got in unanimously. You don't worry about what is a first ballot Hall of Famer. Is there, I mean, there's no different wing. There's not a unanimous wing. There's not a first ballot wing. You're either a Hall of Famer or you're not. 510 said, don't forget the hourly thing. I love that people are reminding us about the legal IDs now. Beautiful. So we've got these 10, 11 years. And let's go ahead and start it right now, all right? Around the horn real quick. Everybody be ready. You don't all have to pop on the mic. Let's see. You guys will be all right. Okay. Should we start from the back going forward? Start at 2008? All right. Dick Williams. For me, yes, Hall of Fame manager. Ryan. Dick Williams, no? Wow. Oh, those are youngsters. I see.
Well, are we going to go the Veterans Committee or just the players?
Ah, that's right. That's an important distinction. Thank you for pointing that out. Now, here's how a guy like Harold Baines gets into the Hall of Fame. These numbers are going to blow you away. Harold Baines maxed out during his 10 years on the regular ballot. Now, you need to get 75% to get induction. A lot of guys will see their percentage go from 55 their first year, and somehow over the next 6 years, he became a better player and eventually got in. It's ridiculous. Ryan Covey chimes in, Herbs, I'm going to take you to Olive Garden for your birthday. Breadsticks all around, my dude. Thank you. Only if Knuckles comes, we can pass him off as a comfort dog. Sad. No, that's not something you joke about. But yeah, I'm all about it, Ryan, as long as you're picking up the tab. All right, so the Veterans Committee is there in case the good old boy network fails. Let me explain what I mean by that. 10 years on the ballot. There's a percentage you must have achieved to be on next year's ballot. So you have a max of 10, but you're not guaranteed 10, because if you don't hit certain numbers, you'll fall off completely. Harold Baines, during his time on the regular ballot, his percentage was not 75, which is the minimum for induction. It wasn't 74, like, oh, just missed it. Cool, we got the Veterans Committee. They'll get him in. No, Harold Baines got 6.1%. The year that he got the most votes, 6.1%. So, if you don't make it in the first 10 years, they will put you through to the Veterans Committee. It's your last chance. Well, for the regular ballot, there are hundreds, literally hundreds of voters. For the Veterans Committee, 16 voters. The 75% rule stays. It still applies. But it's a hell of a lot easier to get 12 votes out of 16 than it is to get more than 75% of the votes for the ever-fluctuating Baseball Writers Association of America, which is what they're the people who get to vote for the Hall of Fame. 831 says, Herbs, if Barry Bonds doesn't get in the Hall of Fame, then Hall of Fame doesn't mean a damn thing anymore. I agree. As soon as Bud Selig, look, I've always been Bonds is in, Clemens is in, Sosa's in, McGuire is in. Some people disagree with me. They say, oh, that's steroids. Those guys are tainted. Then why is Bud Selig in the Hall of Fame? He presided over the whole damn thing. Susan Slusser, a former president of the Baseball Writers Association of America, good friend of mine, got to compete with her on the A's beat for a good long time. She's the first female president of the Baseball Writers Association of America, and I can't think of a better president. She takes her job incredibly serious. She's got integrity. She's honest. And she knows the game. She is what you want in a voter. And if I couldn't, I thought I loved Susan as much as I possibly could until she told me she didn't used to be a Bonds voter, but when Bud Selig became a Hall of Famer, she became a Bonds voter. Love that. What I can't stand is that it even comes to that we're having this conversation. Willie Mays only got 94% of the votes. Okay, Veterans Committee, we're going to rule these guys out. Let me give you some names that got in on the Veterans Committee. Usually it's a what they call a pioneer or an executive, like Larry Doby. Do you know who Larry Doby is? Anyone know? First black American League player. He broke the American League color line. Veterans Committee, Barney Dreyfus is in the Hall of Fame. Anybody have a great Barney Dreyfus story to tell? No, I didn't think so. I've never heard of him. Bowie Kuhn, former commissioner. Walter O'Malley, pioneer executive. Billy Southworth, the aforementioned Dick Williams. Barney Dreyfus. Pat Gillick, pioneer executive. That's veterans. Ron Santo. How do you feel about that one, Ryan? Ron Santo.
That one's tough.
Yeah.
That one's tough for me.
And you're a Cubs fan, right? Santo's not a Hall of Famer. Sorry.
Yeah.
Jacob Rupert, Deacon White, and Hank O'Day. Haven't heard of any of those guys. These are all veterans. Bobby Cox. Now, Bobby Cox wasn't on a ballot for 10 years and didn't get in. Bobby Cox obviously getting in as a manager. So the Veterans Committee is the way some people are going to have to go. If they're going to go at all, it's got to be through the Veterans Committee. It doesn't mean the Veterans Committee can slack off on their responsibility. Feel free to hop in my ears when you need to speak with me, Rhino. Rhino says we got to take a break. We are going to speak after said break. We're going to get into, we're going to have baseball all day. We're going to have stupid rules and Hall of Fame stories. I got some great Hall of Fame stories for you, but we do have other stuff to talk about. The Warriors, for instance. I can't believe we haven't spoken about the Warriors in 60, 73 minutes. That's crazy. It never happens. I told you, this is the weekend that baseball decided to show up. You got the Hall of Fame, A's and Giants are playing well, and the trade deadline is coming right up. But we will step aside, and we'll talk a little bit of Warriors basketball with Connor Letourneau. Free agency, it's calmed down a little bit. Does that mean the Warriors are done? I don't think so. We'll see what Connor thinks on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back and thank you for being with us. It is 1:18 on Sunday. I'm Michael Urban. We will be together until 4 o'clock. Big weekend of baseball. Baseball season finally arrived in the Bay Area. Finally! Giants are playing their best ball of the year. A's are doing exactly what we figured they would do. They'd be okay to start the season, but then slowly, slowly, build. Home run. The A's have got 10 runs. The opponent has 3. And nobody heard anything about it. At least not on the East Coast. The A's, as little attention as they get in their own market, can you imagine how utterly ignored they get nationally? I'll tell you what, I covered the A's on a daily basis for 10 years. I've covered a lot of different teams and a lot of different sports. I'm pretty sure the A's fan base is the most passionate and loyal fan base that I've ever witnessed. I mean, it was incredible. Yeah, they don't come out in big numbers, but man, they got big enthusiasm and big loyalty. It's crazy how connected some of these people are to their team. And that's what every team needs, is that core group of fans that will be with them through thick and thin. And if it's thin for too long, then that group gets thinned out a little bit. So you'll have fewer fans. But those fans, hey, Giants fans that stuck with the terrible, terrible, terrible Giants, hell, the Warriors. All of us here in the Bay Area, it stuck with all that bad basketball. It made it so much sweeter when the Warriors got that first title. When the Giants got the 2010 title, it was so much sweeter because they had failed in 89. They had failed in 2002. Connell Letourneau is going to join us in shortly. We're efforting Connell Letourneau. We're going to get into a little bit of NBA basketball. But like I said, Hall of Fame weekend, Mariano Rivera was just watching him give his induction speech in Cooperstown, New York, upstate New York, just gorgeous, gorgeous bucket list. Go there. And they don't even gouge you. Like, if there's ever a town that could gouge people, tourists, just fleece them, it would be Cooperstown. I mean, you could double the price of everything and everything in Cooperstown, and people would still go. They'd pay it. But it's almost like the pimento loaf sandwiches at the Masters. It's a dollar for a sandwich on the grounds at the Masters. You think, oh my God, I got to eat at the golf tournament. It's going to cost me $5,000. No, it's like a buck for this pimento loaf, I think it's called. Somebody help me out on the Chilton Auto Body text line, 95795. 707 says the 98 home run race saved baseball, backed by steroids. Yeah, I don't know about saved baseball, but it certainly was backed by steroids, and who turned a blind eye to it all? Well, that would be Bud Selig. Let's get away from Bud Selig. Yuck. I'm starting to feel gross. I need some pizzazz. I need some life, energy. Let's go. Let's talk some Warriors basketball. Let's talk to Connell Letourneau. He covers the Warriors for the San Francisco Chronicle. He has been, as you might imagine, very, very busy as of late. Connor, have you allowed yourself to relax? Like, do you know that you can make plans this Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and have them not blow up in your face when the desk calls and says they just signed somebody to a two-way?
Yeah, I mean, that's really the last domino to fall. And let's be honest, given everything else that's happened, that's not really the most important thing in the world. So I do feel pretty comfortable enjoying my life and starting to have a little bit of vacation time. I think it's much needed for me after what was obviously a very long season and then an incredibly chaotic few weeks with the draft and then free agency and summer league and all that. So now I'm starting to take a deep breath. It feels great.
The voice you hear is that of Connor Letourneau. He covers the Warriors for the Chronicle. You can follow him and should on Twitter at @con_cron, at @con_cron, which is CHRON. Connor, the first, 12 hours of free agency, 48 players changed teams, and that was to the tune of $3.17 billion in contracts. Now, most of these got announced inside 10 minutes of when that window passed. So I think more than anything, that really shined a bright, bright light on the fact that just get rid of your dumb tampering rules. Everybody's talking to everybody, and you're never going to be able to stop it, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's the big secret that everyone knows, right? I mean, it's they need to do something to fix it. I know Adam Silver is working on that as we speak. But it's become a charade at this point, and it's kind of laughable. So they need to make some changes for sure. Just be honest about it. Don't make people have to hide it. We all know what's happening anyway. So let's just be transparent about it.
Yeah, and I kind of understand if you want to enforce some sort of no tampering rule with, you know, the highest level of executives. It's still going to be damn near impossible to police, but I hope they're smart enough to know that there's no way you can stop players from talking to each other. I mean, these guys, they have the same agents. It's a pretty tight circle, the fraternity of NBA players. And just if a guy's going to get busted for answering a question about would you like to play with that guy, that runs counter to what the NBA has done to set themselves up. I've been talking the last couple of days, Connor. I think the NBA has passed the NFL in terms of being a 24/7, 365 entity, and it's because of situations like this.
Yeah, I mean, the NBA is basically one big soap opera, and I think the Warriors, the past couple of years, have been at the center of that soap opera, and it's really more about what's happening away from the court, what's happening in the future, free agency, that kind of stuff, than the actual on-the-court product. And I know there were times this season when Durant and a lot of the Warriors got very frustrated with the fact that a lot of us were writing about everything other than the actual basketball on the court.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we have to give our readers and our listeners what they care about, and this is what a lot of people care about.
The voice you hear is that of Connor Letourneau. He's a Warriors beat writer for the San Francisco Chronicle. Connor, I'm not sure that we have spoken since that first day when free agency opened up. Looking back now that we know what we know, do you feel like KD really hadn't made a decision as recently as during the playoffs? Do you buy that he went the entire season without knowing what his next move was?
No, I think it's pretty clear at this point that he knew that he was leaving and that he was going to go play with Kyrie. And I honestly felt that way the entire season. I think I said it, I'm sure I said it on your show, I've said it on other shows on 95.7, that I think he stepped into training camp last September knowing he was not going to be a Warrior the following season, which is why, you know, things boiled over in that argument with Draymond in that Clippers game in mid-November, and why this was such a major storyline all season was because the way he handled it, even without necessarily, you know, his people leaking things, it was just clear being around the team every day that this was not a sustainable situation, and he was on his way out the door. And I had a couple interactions with Kevin during the season, specifically about his relationship with Kyrie, and he got very sensitive about my I went on a podcast in February right when all the speculation about him and Kyrie going to the Knicks was heating up, and said that I believed that he was going to go follow Kyrie wherever he went, whether or not it was to Brooklyn or New York, and he got very upset about that insinuation and pulled me aside in the locker room. And that, to me, just reinforces that the reality is that hit close to home mm-hmm. for him. And he probably, that was probably a truth that he didn't want out there. And he reacted as vehemently as he did because it was true.
So wait, you're saying Kevin Durant was a little bit sensitive about something? Nah.
Shocking, right? Yeah. Shocking, I know.
Oh man! Just wait until Kyrie goes full Kyrie. He's. I'm telling you, man. I think he's in for a rude awakening. That New York media market. It's not like the Bay Area. That's what struck me is that KD seems to think the Bay Area media was tough on him or, you know, too intrusive. My God, you don't know what intrusive is until you've been an athlete in New York.
Yeah, KD, you know, he's the type of guy who compares himself to others all the time, and he really pays attention to how other athletes are treated in comparison to him. And he took issue a couple times in the locker room with how we covered, and when I say we, I mean the traveling beat guys, the guys that are around the team every day, covered Klay Thompson. There were a couple times where Klay Thompson would dip out of a media availability, and we wouldn't necessarily write about it or say anything, and he would, and Katie would be like, hey, if I did that, this would be a big deal, but because Clay does it and Clay can basically do whatever he wants, it's not a big deal. And that, I think, really bothered him on a deep level, even though I don't think he actually had an issue with Clay specifically as a person, but it was just, to him, it felt like a double standard. And that was part of the issue.
Yeah, I mean, I really hope he finds what he's looking for in Brooklyn. I have a feeling he's just going to be one of those perennial seekers. But look, when you're asked in 15 years, Connor, for somebody who wasn't around the Bay Area at that time and just says, give me a snapshot of Kevin Durant's time with the Golden State Warriors. And let's say you had just a couple of minutes to tell that story. What would you say?
That's a good question. What I would basically say is that the first year and a half, 2 years, he was really making an effort and trying to make it work. And then by the third year, it was clear to him that he wasn't going to find what he wanted with the Warriors. I believe he went to the Warriors believing that he needed a title to cement his legacy as the greatest player of his generation, and then he felt like winning a title would make him whole, would kind of fill that void in his life that he had been searching to fill. And when he won not just one but two titles and was two-time Finals MVP and still felt that void, I think that was a super disillusioning experience for him. But the reality of the situation is it was always Kevin Durant and the Warriors. Mm-hmm. He always felt like a mercenary rather than a real fabric of the team, and it was just kind of an awkward fit, and I didn't, it had a shelf life. It wasn't going to last more than 3 years.
Do you think the dust up with Draymond, was that any sort of a factor in Kevin's decision? Because I don't know. You look at the way they interacted after that. Everybody said, I mean, you were in the room, so you tell me. But I you know, the narrative was that they're fine. They worked it out. Teammates get in fights sometimes. But in retrospect, obviously, it looks like Draymond was dead on. I mean, that had to touch really close to home to KD. I think he nailed it.
Yeah, I mean, understandably, everyone's going to look at that incident because it was so public and high profile and point to that, try to make sense of Durant's decision. But in reality, that was just a small thing in my mind that bubbled to the surface and was symptomatic of a much bigger issue and a bigger thing. The reality of the situation is that everyone in that locker room knew that Kevin Durant was leaving from the moment training camp tipped off. You could see it every single day in how he interacted with his teammates. He was very sullen, very kind of reclusive, outside of Quinn Cook, who we knew, he was a childhood friend of his, who he's known most of his entire adult life. I don't think there was anyone on the team that he hung out with in his free time or really was friendly with beyond just a, you know, work arrangement. It's the reality of the situation is that incident is not why he left. That was just symptomatic of a much bigger issue.
The voice you hear is that of Connor Letourneau. He covers the Warriors for the San Francisco Chronicle. You can follow him on Twitter at @Con_Cron. Connor appears courtesy of the Dialpad guest line. It helps you make smarter calls. Connect your team with the business communication platform that powers voice, video, messages, and meetings across your existing devices. Tell me about the takeaway from Summer League, Connor. I know Jordan Poole didn't shoot particularly well in Sacramento. He stayed aggressive, which is what they were looking for from him. Some shots started to fall. Was there any concern initially that, ooh, we may have swung and missed hard on this?
I mean, no one should have a label put them on them as a bust or what have you, based off your summer league performance. There's been a lot of guys coming out of college who have horrible summer league performances and end up being great players. So I don't think anyone should sound the alarms or worry too much. I mean, this is a guy whose game subsists on making shots and hitting threes. And there's going to be adjustment period for any guy going from the college game to the NBA three-point line. I think there are things that the Warriors saw in summer league from him that they liked. I mean, they like how aggressive he is. They like his swag factor. They like, you know, they like his ability to score and all over the court. But he's definitely raw, and he's got to figure out some things. And I'm not convinced at all that he can be a rotation guy, a reliable rotation guy as a rookie. Which, looking at their depth chart right now, they might need him to be.
Connor, who do you think helped their case towards building? I want to be a rotation guy. There are some rotation spots clearly open on this team. Who got themselves a leg up?
Eric Pascal, the rookie out of Villanova, 41st pick in the draft. I really liked what he did at Summer League. He's not a guy who's going to necessarily wow you, but he's very polished. He's ready to play a role in the NBA right now as kind of a stretch four type. People have compared him to Draymond, and I don't love that comparison. I think he's more like a JaMychal Green or maybe even kind of a P.J. Tucker, a guy, a stretch four who can bang down low and also, you know, play reliable, versatile defense. So I think he can play meaningful minutes right away as a backup to Draymond. And I think the Warriors were really pleased with what he was able to do in Vegas and Sacramento.
Connor Letourneau covers the Warriors for the San Francisco Chronicle. Connor, clearly there is a lot more going on than just KD going to Brooklyn. The numbers, like I said, $3.17 billion in the first 12 hours, changed hands, just insanity. And then just when it seemed like it had kind of calmed down, boom, Woj drops the Westbrook bomb. What was your reaction to that?
I mean, not surprised, given everything that happened with Paul George moving. You knew as soon as Paul George was dealt to the Clippers that Westbrook was not gonna stay long with Oklahoma City.
Right.
So it was just a matter of finding a place. And Houston, to me, is not an ideal fit for him, but it's probably as good as they were going to do. He can reunite with James Harden, the guy who he obviously played with in OKC, has a close relationship with. I don't love the basketball fit, but at the end of the day, they're two very talented players, and talent tends to win out in the NBA.
We're talking with Connor Letourneau. He covers the Warriors for the San Francisco. Are you at a train station right now, Connor? What was that?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I'm at Jack London Square, and Amtrak's rolling through right now.
Nice. I like it. Again, Connor Letourneau, you can follow him on Twitter @con_cron. D'Angelo Russell, let's assume that he's with the team the whole season, for one. Let's assume also that Clay comes back healthy in, I'll throw out, I don't know, mid-February. Do they start trying to see how Clay fits in as the three?
Yeah, I think that's going to be the plan. I think they want, you know, there's been a lot of reports that they got D'Angelo as a trade piece, but everyone I've talked to in the organization has told me that they want to see if this can work, and they believe it can work because a lot of their guys are pretty versatile. So they're going to start Steph at the one, D'Angelo Russell at the two, and then when Clay comes back, hopefully, ideally in mid-December, January type time, he will play the three. And, you know, as you know, in the NBA, your position is largely kind of determined by who you defend.
Right.
And Clay is one of their best. Well, he will be their best perimeter defender with Andre Iguodala out. So I actually think it can work. D'Angelo Russell was obviously an ISO guy in Brooklyn, playing a lot of pick and rolls, but he is a really good catch and shoot guy as well, a really good spot up shooter. So I think he'll be able to play off the ball. I actually don't think it's as bad of a fit as a lot of people are saying.
Yeah, and you mentioned that D'Angelo Russell thrives in the pick and roll. Willie Cauley-Stein did quite a bit of pick and rolling in Sacramento. I've read from, I think it might have been Collins, but somebody was suggesting that, yeah, you're going to see that pick and roll a lot with D'Angelo Russell and Willie Cauley-Stein.
Yeah, I mean, that was a big reason why they actually wanted Willie Cauley-Stein, which is interesting because you know, Steve Kerr has run the least amount of pick and rolls of any head coach in the NBA in the past 5 years. But they know that to stay competitive, they need to adapt on the fly. And part of that is going to be introducing some wrinkles into the offense. And I think you're going to see a lot of situations where D'Angelo Russell's kind of running that second unit when Steph and Draymond sit. As you know, their minutes tend to line up. So I think it's going to be a situation where you're seeing a good amount of pick and rolls with Willie Cauley-Stein and D'Angelo Russell during those minutes. And I think that's a nice little wrinkle for that offense, because those guys are two of the best pick and roll players in the league. And when you have that, you have to use it. You know, you have to make sure that you're maximizing their strengths.
Connell Letourneau covers the Warriors for the San Francisco Chronicle. Just another couple of minutes. Thank you again, Connor, for your time on a Sunday. Smiley Geach, every time I watched him, I fell in love, deeper and deeper in love. And I know you're not supposed to fall in love during summer league, but I like everything about this guy, man. And what's exciting is that I think he's just now scratching the surface. My God, 18 years old in the G League. Where is his ceiling? Can he be someday more than a rotation player? Are we talking about a future all-star?
I honestly think he has that type of potential. I think the sky is really the limit for that guy. I got to see him in Santa Cruz. I went down there just on an off day back in March. Just wanted to go kind of check a Santa Cruz Warriors game out, not planning to write. And he went off for like 25, 12, and 5 and was putting the ball down on the floor, passing, you know, doing no-look passes, throwing down highlight-worthy dunks. And I turned to my friend who I was with, and I was like, this guy looks like he could be a young Nikola Jokic, which I know is high praise, but I feel like he has that kind of potential. And I fully expected them to do everything in their power to get him in the draft, to keep him in their system, keep him in a comfortable environment in Santa Cruz. And they did that. If you're wondering how much they like this guy, they traded up two spots. They had the 41st pick. They gave away two future second-round picks and $1 million just on the off chance that Sacramento would take this guy at 40. So that's how much the Warriors love this kid. And they don't expect him to be a huge contributor this season. Like you said, he's 18 years old, doesn't turn 19 till next month. But he could be a real building block for them in a couple years. I think, in my mind, worst-case scenario, knowing his work ethic, knowing what he's about, I think he's a solid rotation guy, but I think he has a much, much higher ceiling than that.
This guy's going to be a fan favorite, don't you think?
Sorry, what did you say?
He's going to be a fan favorite, don't you think, at Chase Center?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the guy from Belgrade, his story, he was discovered in a tiny little gym outside Belgrade where they had linoleum tiles and there were weeds growing up through the cracks.
Oh, man.
Kent Lakob in Vegas about how they found him, and Kent, you know, the GM for the Warriors, Phil Lakob's son, was actually the guy who discovered him. And so his story, and just also his aggressiveness, the way he plays, he's so confident. He really believes in himself. He plays really hard. This is a guy who moved by himself at 18 years old, didn't know a word of English, moved to Santa Cruz, California, and, you know, the Warriors taught him how to use a credit card. They taught him how to grocery shop. Jeez. And here he is in the NBA providing for his family. I mean, it's a remarkable story, and I think fans are really going to latch on to that.
I agree. I love the youth movement. They've got Steph is the old head on the team. He's 30 years old. He's the oldest guy on the roster. They are going young. They're getting a little bit more athletic. I'm excited for this season, man, Connor. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. I'm excited, too. It should be a lot of good stories. It'll be fun.
No doubt. There's going to be some joy, I think, in your job again, unlike last year.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is kind of a collective sigh of relief, to be honest with you, among media. Just, okay, you know, it's fun covering Durant for a few years, but it was time for a change for everyone involved, I think. So it'll be a fresh start, I think.
Okay, and just don't get frustrated, Connor, because I'm going to have you on load management early next season, all right?
All right, sounds good.
All right, thanks for your time again, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Connor Letourneau. We'll pivot back to upstate New York it's still on TV here in the studio. Just unbelievable images. Just such a cool day. I'm going to try to relate to you my experience when I went there to watch Ricky, well, to cover Ricky Henderson's induction. Ricky Henderson, not a unanimous Hall of Famer. You're not going to believe some of the names that I throw at you that were not unanimous. Hell, I could give you every single name except one, and they were not unanimous. Let's right some wrongs on 95.7 The Game.
Madison Bumgarner, hey, now you know Will Smith's going to bring a bounty. Madison Bumgarner is going to bring a lot more than people think, because while the narrative has been he's not this, he's not that, he still probably is the best pitcher that is going to change teams. And I think there are data teams like the Rays and the Astros and the Dodgers. He's not going to be traded to the Dodgers, I know that. But there are teams that feel like we can help him with pitch usage and attacking hitters and all of that. And he might be the difference.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
That was MLB.com's Richard Justice on the Damon Bruce Show. Talking, of course, about the Giants, the trade deadline. Remember, there's only one deadline. There's not the July 31st, and then, oh, you can make other deals for another month or so. It was supposed to stimulate more frenzy. The trade deadline is obviously, it's one of the ways that, you know, baseball keeps itself in the news. Excuse me. But it's not perfect. It never is. Oh, man, 5'10". KD had that black 7 hat on at the end of the regular season. Any of you guys know what that might be a reference to?
That's a Colin Kaepernick's brand. A bunch of NBA players were wearing those hats throughout the season. Although it could be a double entendre, but it is what it is.
What's the double entendre?
Well, meaning like... Or had double meaning, sorry. There's double meaning. He's going to be number 7.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, you know?
He's going to be number 7. Gotcha. And is Anthony Davis getting his beloved 23?
No. So actually, they Nike pulled back on that decision because they had already manufactured so many LeBron 23 jerseys that they basically stepped in and said it would cost them so much money. And so now Anthony Davis is going to be number 3? 3, I believe. Yes, 3.
Wow. How about that? Stepping in on the uniform number. You don't often see any NBA players told, no, you can't do that. I mean, this is a time of unprecedented power for NBA players. I mean, they're basically building their own teams. And I'm all for it. Super teams? First off, that is not a new concept. The Warriors didn't invent the super team. The Miami Heat didn't invent the super team. Look back at the great champions. A lot of them had like 4 Hall of Famers on their roster, but they weren't called a super team at the time. Like the Boston Celtics. Man, that team, when Bill Walton was relatively healthy and able to give them, you know, regular minutes, that team was about as stacked as an NBA team can get. I mean, there was Hall of Fame dripping all over that roster. Super teams are not new. One of the interesting developments of this free agency period, really, is that it used to be all about getting a big three. Got to have a big three. The Warriors' big three, of course, was KD, Steph, and Klay. And oh, by the way, we've got a defensive player of the year here in Draymond Green. Picked up a former All-Star center, Boogie Cousins. Look at the lineup that the Philadelphia 76ers trot out. Their starting lineup. Some people would look at that and say, well, that's a super team. But then you look at the team that won the championship this past year. Was that a super team? Who was their big three? Who was their big two? They didn't have a big two. They had Kawhi and a bunch of really good players around him and depth. A deep rotation, a versatile roster of defensive Dobermans that just get after it. Kawhi proved you can win a title with a singular superstar. Now, it's exhausting, and he didn't want to do it again, obviously, which is why he wanted to get Paul George to go to Clipperland to play with him. But we're looking at now the big three. It's like, it's old hat. The dynamic duo is the new big three. And you look all around basketball, and there are some unbelievably good duos. I want to get back into the – we'll get back over to the NBA in due time. But because this is the first big baseball weekend of the year, I've been waiting for this. And not specifically for the Hall of Fame weekend, but I've just been waiting for a time, and I didn't think it was going to come this year, where both teams are playing good baseball. Both teams in the Bay Area are playing good baseball. And the deadline's coming soon, inside of 2 weeks. And it's Hall of Fame weekend. That is a big baseball weekend. Will you stop it with the Warriors lost because of injuries? No more Chilton Autobody text line saying the Warriors would have three-peated if it wasn't for injuries. Stop it. Listen to yourself. Listen to how you sound. Did the Warriors get any lucky bounces, so to speak, health-wise, during this championship run? Yes. Every team that wins a title, they're fortunate a couple of times, a couple of different ways along the way. That's just how it happens when they won their first title, the Warriors. Kevin Love, Kyrie Irving, injured. So was everybody in Cleveland saying, well, we would have won that if these guys weren't? Well, that's a bad example, actually, because that's exactly what they said. Pimento cheese at the Masters. Thank you, text line. Beers were also $3 to $4. 408, it's refreshing to hear someone talk about something other than basketball. All right, so here we go. Let's get back to these Hall of Famers and their percentages. We bring it up because Mariano Rivera, inducted today, is the first unanimous induction in baseball history. And that's insane. And the reason that is because you had an entire generation of baseball writers who decided amongst them that if Babe Ruth was not unanimous, nobody should be unanimous. So I don't know if they took turns. Okay, this, you know, it's your year to not vote for the obvious unanimous guy. All you need is one, which is where my 90% rule comes in. You have one job to do as a Hall of Fame voter. It is to identify and reward Hall of Famers. That's it. It's not up to you to decide whether that guy should be unanimous or whether he should be a first ballot guy. None of that factors in, or shouldn't, but it does. Personal agendas are part of this. Very difficult to weed them out. That's part of the reason I like the way the NFL does it. In case you missed it, the NFL, basically, each player gets assigned a writer, or a writer gets assigned a player to represent and to present their case for a Hall of Fame candidacy. So it's that one writer who's covered that athlete, covered the teams he played for, knows that athlete probably better than anybody else in the room or in the country. So that guy goes up in front of all the voters and makes his case for whichever player. I use Joe Montana as the example just because it's the funniest example I've heard of. You can go up there and you can take an hour. You can take 2 hours to present the case for whoever you're presenting for. In the case of Joe Montana, Ira Miller, who was with the Chronicle when he covered the 49ers, he walked up to the microphone and just said, Joe Montana, and sat down. And Joe Montana got voted in. I would be okay with something like that for baseball, but we're not going to get it. We get hundreds of people with their own agendas. And again, here's where my 90% rule comes in. Let's pick Ted Williams. Ted Williams got in with 93.4% of the voters saying yay. Yay. I don't think they said yay. Yay. Ted Williams, 93.4. That means the year that he was on the ballot, the year that he got in, 6.6% of the people did not vote for Ted Williams. Seriously, you got a ballot. You're supposed to identify the Hall of Famers on this ballot. Ted Williams is on the ballot, and you don't check that box. Now, why would you do that? Might it be because Ted Williams was a bit of an a-hole with the press? It's exactly why it happened. But that's exactly what should not be allowed to happen. It's a personal agenda. So the 90% rule is Ted Williams, those 6.6% of the voting populace that year, you're done. You don't ever get to vote for the Hall of Fame again. If you didn't vote for Ted Williams and he got in at 93.4%, you don't know what a Hall of Famer is. It's that simple. It's a very simple rule. If somebody gets in with 90% or more and you didn't vote for them, you clearly have an agenda. Or you just don't know what a Hall of Famer is. Either way, I'm out. You're gone. Done. By the way, you're listening? Yeah. I get the double point from Bobby. I'm hitting the legal on time. You're listening to 95.7 The Game. KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco. It's a radio.com sports station. 415. Can we just all agree it was a depressing-ass way to end a magical 5 years, and they deserve to go out better than that? I'm assuming you're talking about the Warriors. It's not over. Quit talking about it like it's over. To end a magical 5 years. Okay, the Oracle run ended, but there is going to be an Oracle part of this dynasty, and there's going to be a Chase part of the dynasty. The dynasty is hitting pause for now, but they're not done by any stretch. Steph Curry's the oldest guy on the team. He's 30. I think Steph's got a few more good years in him. Okay, so 6.6% of you don't get to vote anymore because you didn't vote for Ted Williams. Okay, we're going to work backwards. We pulled... how many names are on this list? We went back to 2008. Yeah, all the way up to 2019. Harold Baines. Again, in case you missed it, Harold Baines, he was on the ballot for 10 years. Got 6.1% was his highest vote total. But the Veterans Committee put him in. Veterans Committee, what? I'm telling you, baseball cannot get out of its own way. So let's work from the bottom. We're going to rule out the veterans because we know that that's just comically bad. Everybody in the production room, they have their ballots as well. And who's going to speak for you guys? Ryan, are you going to speak? You speak for the group. Let's see. First one, 2008, Goose Gossage.
100%? Eh.
Really?
Thumbs up, yeah. I think so.
You think so, or would you vote for him?
I'd vote for him.
All right.
Yeah.
Everybody in there would vote for him?
Yeah, Bobby says yeah.
Okay. So Rich Gossage got in with 85.8%. Almost 15% of the voters said, nah, Goose isn't a Hall of Famer. So there's one. I would have voted for him. He should be unanimous. Next one, Jim Rice. This is a tough one for me.
I have no clue.
Jim Rice, great Boston Red Sox slugger, great outfielder. I know a little bit more about Jim Rice than probably most people my age that grew up in this area of the country, only because Jim Rice was my middle brother's favorite player. But Jim Rice, I don't know. I don't have a problem with him not being unanimous. But again, 85% of the people said, yes, he's a Hall of Famer. So you just barely get by with like 5.5%. Ken Griffey Jr. Who didn't vote for Ken Griffey Jr.? You guys are all Ken Griffey Jr., right? All you thumbs up. Yep. Ken Griffey Jr. got 99.3%. He was the closest before Mariano to getting unanimous. Now, that makes me feel a little bit better, but still, 0.7% didn't vote for Ken Griffey. Who doesn't vote for Ken Griffey Jr.? If you want to join the conversation, 888-957-9570, Chilton Autobody text line 95795. Somebody asked yesterday, and I didn't answer it, so I want to answer it today. I'm guessing the same person is out there listening. What hat a player wears on his Hall of Fame plaque is decided by? Anyone know the answer to that?
Isn't it the player?
It is not the player. Most people think it is the player. Well, Wade Boggs had kind of a side door deal with the Tampa Bay Rays, and part of his agreement to signing with the Rays, they were going to give him X amount of dollars or something extra if, Wade, when they ask you what you want to go into the Hall of Fame as, now they asked the player. They wanted him to say, I'm going to go in as a Ray. I'm Wade Boggs. And don't you think of Wade Boggs when you hear Tampa Bay Rays? Of course you do. So that was their deal. That's how the Rays were going to get somebody in the Hall of Fame. We're going to overpay this guy, and he's going to promise to go in as a Ray. Only one problem.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.